Big Talk. Inspiration Wednesdays.
Now, if you, like me, went along to the last Pecha Kucha event a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard a presentation by sport historian Dr. Dean Allen on his fascination with the sport of cricket and the history of Mikey's Fontein and the unusual story of how those two passions intersect. I've never been there myself. It's one of those places that's always been on my bucket list, and I've just never got there. So I find it completely intriguing, so much so that I've asked him to join us in studio today to chat about the story of Mikey's Fontein and its association with the game of cricket, which is a story he's told in his book called Empire, War and Cricket in South Africa. Dean, it's great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Pippa. Thank you for having me.
I'm almost as intrigued by your own story as I am by this book, because you're from the UK. How does a sport historian from the UK end up doing his PhD on a tiny Victorian town in South Africa?
Oh my goodness. I often ask that question myself. I mean, I've been in South Africa since the mid-90s and I've fallen in love with this country. I feel more South African than I do British, despite
really?
This accent, actually. I studied at Stellenbosch University, actually. Mm. I went to university late, at the age of 27, and I studied the history of sport in South Africa, and that took me to Mikey's Fontein because I'd heard of this cricket connection, which a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, would know of. And then I started to dig a little bit deeper, and I realized that nobody had ever written the story of this incredible little place in the Karoo, and that was going to be my journey.
Now, if nobody had ever written it, it must have made your job quite tough finding source material to piece it all together. How long did it take you?
Well, that was the challenge. I mean, the PhD, which the book comes from, took me 5 years, and then to turn it into a book took several more. I'm actually the first person to actually uncover the original archives of Mikey's Fontein, the Logan family archives. James Logan, as I'll explain, is the original creator of Mikey's Fontein. Mm-hmm. And I'd heard that his family archives existed, and I was the first researcher to get my hands on them. So wow. It was like finding treasure, really, and enabled me to write this incredible story.
Now, the story has at its center James Logan, a man who came from Scotland from humble beginnings. What brought him to South Africa?
Well, it's an amazing story. I mean, he was born in the borders of Scotland in 1857, a working class man, and he left school at the age of 14 and worked on the local railway station. But by the age of 19, clearly his ambitions outgrew the class confines of, you know, late Victorian Britain. He got on a ship that was bound for Queensland, Australia. He wasn't even coming to South Africa. You know, you find your fortune the other end of the British Empire. But of course, diamonds had been discovered some years earlier. James Logan gets signed off by the ship's master and arrives in Cape Town just as the Cape Town station had been completed. And his story is remarkable from his arrival. Would you believe that this man was promoted from porter at Cape Town station to station master within 3 months of his arrival? He's 20 years of age.
Wow. So station master within 3 months at the age of 20, but that was in Cape Town. How did he come to even find Mikey's Fontein in the first place?
Well, the thing is, Mikey's Fontein is built on the railways, and you know, the colonial period's back in you know, the news now, so we're engaging with it again. I mean, as one of the archetypes of that period, Cecil Rhodes once said, he was going to build a railway from Cape Town to Cairo, of course, and James Logan was part of this rail revolution. So he was offered a job in the Karoo region to control the building of the railways into the interior on their way to the Kimberley diamond fields, of course. So his timing, as I say at my talks, couldn't have been better. I mean, it was to take advantage of this, of course, and now he made his money quickly through dealings with the railways, but also the diamonds and insider trading and those kind of things that were happening, the shady business deals, shall we say, of the day. And that's when he set his focus on this little place called Mikey's Fontein, bought three farms in the area, and decided he was going to build a perfectly preserved late Victorian village, almost as a smokescreen for how he was making his money, should I say.
Because it was literally just a railway siding and a shack next to, you know, serving as the station when he got there.
Well, exactly, yeah, and land was cheap in the area, and he set up at a place called Toast River, which was Montague Road in those days, and he built his first railway hotel, bought his first railway refreshment facilities, which made him a lot of money in those days as well. But this is where he was going to build his empire. And I mean, for visitors and listeners who have visited Mikey's Fontein, its location is the most mystical thing about it, because it literally is in the middle of nowhere. But when I try to retrace how this man, you know, did what he did, I often think, well, okay, I needed to go back to the borders of Scotland where he came from. And to be quite honest, his hometown is very reminiscent of Mikey's Fontein.
Really?
There is not much around there, and he created something out of nothing. And of course, that bought him the publicity that was needed to further his business and his political activities as well. It's an incredible story.
I mean, it is the story of a man of ambition, who set his sights on getting to the top and got there on his own nefarious means sometimes. But as you say, I mean, I love this concept of this immaculate town as a front for where the money was coming from and going to. But I mean, he literally built it. The materials were imported from the UK. Stuff came in from Glasgow. The street lamps came in from London.
Incredible. I mean, yeah. No expense was spared. I mean, if when you walk that main street at Mikey's Fontaine, you're looking at London lampposts imported from the capital of England in the 1880s, ornate ironwork from the foundries of Scotland. You're walking on Canadian pine. This place was built to last. It was a product, yes, of the British Empire, but Logan was making a statement. And I think that's why it's at the heart of so many South African visitors and foreign visitors alike, because it almost harks back to another age. And as a historian, it's a real privilege to be able to, as I said, contribute to the history and to write its unique story.
You mentioned getting access to those family archives. How did you find his descendants and go to them and say, what have you got?
Well, it was, again, you form relationships over the years. And of course, I'm very, very... connected with the community at Mikey's Fontaine. There's 400 people that live on the other side of the railway lines now who rely on us as visitors to visit the town and keep it going. And there was a chap called David Rawdon who bought Mikey's Fontaine in 1968. I mean, your listeners will know David's name through his connection with Lanzarote, Stellenbosch, Marine, Hermanus. I mean, he's a famous hotelier. Dave made a deal with me. He said, Dean, you write a book about Mikey's Fontaine and the breakfasts are on me. So that's why it took me 10 years to write the book, of course.
Must have been some good breakfast.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But I kept going back and I met with the existing Logan family members and I gained their trust, and eventually I think I wore them down. They invited me inside and for the first time they opened up their treasured history with me. But what makes this even more precious, of course, is a few various family decisions. Most of these archives were sold off in the mid-2000s, just after I got hold of the information, so it made it even more important that I write this incredible story before all this information disappeared.
Okay, talk about timing. Sounds like you had a touch of Logan in you as well. My guest in studio, if you've just tuned in, is Dr. Dean Allen, talking to me about his book, Empire, War and Cricket in South Africa, which is the story of Mikey's Fontaine, the story of James Logan, and the story of cricket. So without further ado, where does cricket come into it?
Well, cricket, it's often said that one of the first international matches took place at Mikey's Fontaine. Well, I'd love it to be the first. I mean, the first test match took place down the road at St. George's Park in Port Elizabeth. But yes, the English cricket teams of the 1890s, certainly 1894 and 1899 tour, played at Mikey's Fontaine, first-class matches. You see, Logan, ironically a Scotsman, was the man who I argue brings international sport to this country, because he's the benefactor, you see. The biggest team in the world was the English cricket team in the 1890s. It was the golden age of cricket. W.G. Grace was a famous name. Logan wanted to bring these famous cricketers down to South Africa, almost to impart some kind of imperial kinship amongst South Africa back with the old country. But more important for Logan, of course, it was good publicity. Who would question the man who brings the English cricket team down to South Africa? I mean, it's genius. If you think about it, Pippa, we still use sport in that way, don't we? I mean, the Premier League football teams are often bought by foreign investment, foreign investors, should I say, to promote business dealings, etc. And obviously, James Logan was aware of that. The Victorians were really no different than the way we operate today.
It's the first form of cricket sponsorship.
Indeed.
In its early days.
Indeed.
But of course, the timing of those particular tours came at a time where Anglo-Boer War was underway in some of those tours. I mean, it must have been incredibly controversial for the greater South African picture.
Well, as I explained in my book, politics is not very far away from this picture. In fact, it drives the whole story. Logan uses cricket as a political tool, as well as Cecil Rhodes, of course. Rhodes was in charge of the 1894 tour, the first ever South African tour back. Logan, would you believe, uses the war as an opportunity. In 1899, as we know, the South African War broke out. Logan decides to offer his town, this model town of Mikey's Fontaine, to the British Army. 10,000 Imperial troops and 20,000 horses were stationed at Mikey's Fontaine in the first few months of the war. And that's, of course, why we can still find those bully beef cans, that thick Victorian glass that litter the felt all around the town. I mean, it's incredible for me to be able to walk in the field and actually sense this history. And when I take visitors with me, they're absolutely delighted, because I'm not only explaining this history, I can show them it as well. It's tangible. You can feel it in the air, you know?
I mean, how's the timing? A WhatsApp has literally just appeared on my screen from Lynn Bergfleet saying, I've read that during the Anglo-Boer War, the British kept 20,000 horses at Mikey's Fontaine, and that the hotel was used by the British Army. I mean, the hotel is such a pivotal part. I know, even not having been there, what I know about Mikey's Fontaine is the famous Lord Milner Hotel. How long has it actually been there?
I mean, the Lord Milner, named after Alfred Milner during the South African War. I mean, you could see whose side James Logan was on, couldn't you? He completed it just as the war broke out. It was the only time his timing was out, this wonderful imperious building in the middle of nowhere. But it wasn't the rich and famous who were the first to stay there. I mean, people like Kipling, Randolph Churchill. Olive Schreiner was a famous resident of Mikey's Fontaine. The first people to stay in that hotel were people like Kitchener, Haig, Ironside, all these great names of the British Army. Again, it brought publicity. And of course, I often say Logan brought in security for his own town as well. I mean, who would trouble him in a town that's defended by the British Army? Would you believe Queen Victoria writes, "What a noble gesture to Queen and country." I mean, Logan's name was everywhere in the 1890s. Mikey's Fontaine was a household name. It was where the rich and famous would want to come and visit.
The need for water must have been, and the discovery of a water source was crucial to this development, wasn't it?
Absolutely crucial. If you know that part of the Glencaroe, it's water is scarce anyway. But Logan drilled. It took him a number of years to find a regular water source. And then he started selling water back to the railways that once employed him. I mean, he was some man, really. I mean, you think about it, he'd have a captive market, all these thirsty steam trains steaming up to the diamond fields, and Logan would then sell the water back. And of course, every time that he found water or he opened the railway station, it was publicity. And the other thing which interests me is the link to media, of course, which you'll appreciate. James Logan buys his own newspaper, so it means the news that comes out is positive.
Controlled by him.
Incredible.
Yeah, sure. I mean, where did his political aspirations take him? How far did he get?
Well, he was part of Cecil Rhodes's, one of his officers, should I say. I mean, he was part of the ministry, and he actually served in the Cape Parliament till 1908. James Logan's own political affiliations were his own party. Often he crossed the floor, to be quite honest, to suit his own needs. I mean, he was one of those. I mean, you didn't have those strong party affiliations in those days that we recognise today. So people like Logan would actually use politics almost in business.
As
and
a
vice
business
versa.
Tool. Yeah. Now, somebody has just SMS'd me asking if you know anything about the origin of the name of Mikey's Fontaine. Angie, thanks for the question. I know that you do. Won't you please explain?
No, great question. Yeah. I'm often asked this at my talks. Matches or Mikey's is the river reed that the Khoisan used to build their basket or their huts, and Fontaine, fountain, suggests water was in the area. I mean, the irony, Pippa, is we've got this wonderful African-sounding name with this very British origin. So, I mean, it makes my talks back in the UK quite difficult because, Mikey's Fontaine or Matchy's Fontaine is a difficult name for the British to understand. Mm-hmm. A lovely story, of course. Someone suggested that James Logan should change the name to Logansville. Mm-hmm. And he stood up in Parliament and he said, "No, it's not that I have done so much there. Others have done so little. The name Mikey's Fontaine will remain." I mean, it was a great story.
Yeah. Thanks, Angie. Great question. And hello, Errol is on the line from Blue Downs. Good afternoon. Nice to hear from you, Errol.
Hello, Pepper. My voice is not so good, man. I've got a bit of bronchitis. I've been to Mikey's Fontaine last month.
Yeah?
And, it's the first time ever I've been there. And it's such an historical place. And I walked across the floors of the Lord Milner Hotel, and you know, with every step you take, you hear that creaks. So it's probably that the floor has never been changed after all these years. And they've got this wonderful, like your guest said, this wonderful lamppost there, and there's an old Shell petrol service station tank there, and I actually took a photo at the fire tender that was used at the time, the old Magera's dates.
Yeah.
So it's all imported stuff that's on display. And also stopped there at the time was the Rovos rail train.
Okay, that's right.
And so in the hotel, in the pub at the bottom, they had a guy there that was reminiscent of the old English days who played the piano.
Fantastic.
You know, he played all these honky-tonk things there. It was actually quite nice.
Errol,
along with him.
I know you're a man who loves his history. It sounds like he really enjoyed the walk back in time. Is it something you'd recommend for everyone?
And I think, you know, when you walk across that floors, you actually disturb the ghosts that linger there. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Errol. Lovely call. Are there any ghost stories associated with Mikey's Fontaine?
Errol was completely right in what he was saying about all the different things that you can see there. It's one of those places where you think, well, what can I do here? And the time goes so quickly. I mean, there's several museums and, of course, all the artifacts. Yes, the ghost stories are often brought up at my talks. And there's suggestion that there's a white lady there that she's a friendly ghost, but she often disturbs residents at night by rattling a door or two. My favourite ghost, I think, is the so-called British soldier that walks the N1 near to Mikey's Fontaine, looking for a lift home after the war. So please, anybody, pick him up and take him back to the old country.
But
it adds to the mystique of the place, of course. And I mean, that was a wonderful call. And ever since I've written this book, I just realised the passion that people have for the place. I never tire of telling the story. I travel all around the country telling the real history behind the place, which is actually more remarkable than what people actually know, you know, because it ties together what was happening at that time. And I think we need to understand that to create a, you know, a clearer impression of the kind of legacy that these people left.
Have left. Mm. Well, I mean, there's some fascinating, I mean, people just sharing with me their photographs on our email, for example, and an SMS here from Jean or Jean saying, there's the most amazing museum down in the basement under the station with an absolute warren of rooms full of amazing things. Somebody else WhatsApping to say, many years ago, my wife and I stayed at the Lord Milner Hotel in Mikey's Fontein on our way back from Cape Town on our honeymoon. My wife didn't know about this and went so pale when I confirmed our reservation with the receptionist that she asked if my wife was okay. They had a big drought at the time, but as we moved into our room, the first drops of rain fell and people began shouting outside. The room was huge with two baths next to each other, which we had to try out. Such very happy memories. Thanks for sharing them with us. I mean, how many times? You must have been back countless times now. What's your favorite place to visit, or your favorite, if I had to say, your best experience in Mikey's Fontein?
Well, that's what I love about doing what I do, because people share these incredible memories, whether it be a short visit or whether it be a wedding or whatever. But in terms of my own experience, I just love the space, that sense of sort of freedom and inspiration. I mean, Olive Schreiner famously wrote that it inspired her to write some of her work. I mean, she loved the Karoo while she stayed there. I mean, often I'll walk the felt, as I say, where, and you can imagine, 10,000 troops were based during a war, and you know, not all of them came back. So maybe some of the spirit is there, but the people, I think, is the most important thing for me. I mean, people that visit Mikey's Fontein, they're a special community out there, and they're so proud of their town, and, you know, they welcome people. And often I just sit in front of the Hotel Milner, and I look out and I watch people's faces as they gasp their eyes for the first time on this incredible building, and, you know, in the middle of nowhere in this Victorian town. Honestly, Pippa, I've had the privilege to have travelled, you know, large parts of the world. I've never been to a place like this, and to have ended up being this man from Somerset in the West Country of England to come to South Africa to write its story. Perhaps it was my calling, you know.
Yeah, as long a journey as James Logan made all the way back then. Marilyn, I'll come to you in just a moment, but before we run out of time, I must ask Dean to share with us details of the tours that he runs, because you can actually, if you've been fascinated, and I can see many of you are, judging by your messages, you should know that Dean actually offers tours to Mikey's Fontein, and you've actually got another two coming up within the next fortnight, Dean?
No, very much so. They're coming up very soon, actually, before I go back to the UK, because I've got to go back and teach at Bournemouth University. I'm running two-night tour packages. One's this weekend. We leave on Friday till Sunday, and the other one's on Monday the 11th to Wednesday the 13th. We've already done one. Absolute success. I mean, the people that joined me just loved the fact that we could walk the place and I could tell the story while we were there. And not only that, Pippa, the food was tremendous. I mean, it really did look after us. So it offers tremendous value, and I'd be delighted if as many people could join me now while I'm here in South Africa before I go back to England on one of these tours this weekend.
Okay, so if they'd like to know more pricing, where they go, how to sign up, etc., how do they make contact with you, Dean?
Well, yeah, they can email me at Dean, and that's D-E-A-N, at Dean Allen. .co.za, that's A-L-L-E-N. Or if you want to make a booking, you can call the Lord Milner Hotel directly on 023-561-3011, or email them at bookings@lordmilnerhotel.co.za.
And I'll ask my producer to tweet all of those details. So great. If you're driving right now, you can get the info on Twitter. Just very quickly before we go to news, Jean asking if the Red London bus is still parked there.
Very much so. The Red London bus, it does a tour every single evening. We'll be doing that as part of my tour. They call it the longest, shortest tour in the world. And as Johnny, as Errol said, he's there, and he's the unofficial tour guide.
Yeah.
And he makes an announcement every evening on the bus. He says, showtime. We're turning left because we can't turn right. And the thing goes in a big circle around the village. And people just amazed by this thing. I mean, it's remarkable stuff.
Now, I know I'm going to be late for news, but it's not every day that I see Beezy Bailey's name appear on my screen. So with permission, Wesley, my apologies. Beezy Bailey, the artist on the line, I believe you had a very special celebration in Mikey's Fontein.
Yeah. I celebrated my 50th birthday there 5 years ago. Yeah. And we had a masked ball. I actually had an old Bentley, which I sold to finance the whole thing. It was a weekend-long affair. But the highlight, I thought would amuse you, was the cricket match, where it was the Helen Ziller versus Ronnie Castle's 11. And there was Helen arrived and boldly bowling Ronnie in the batting. It was just a fantastic occasion.
Which team won, Beezy?
I can't remember. I think I was too busy laughing. But Helen's actually planted a fever tree there, which has got a label on it to commemorate the occasion, which wonderful. Is just wonderful, yeah. Wonderful.
Thanks for calling in. Fantastic call, BZ. I mean, more than one special story associated with the town. Sounds like memories are still being made. Dean, it's been fantastic having you with us. Thanks for popping in.
Thank you, Pippa. Thanks so much.
Dean Allen is the author of the book. If you're interested in reading it, it's called Empire, War and Cricket in South Africa. And call the Lord Milner Hotel if you're interested in joining one of his tours within the next couple of weeks to go and experience more of Mikey's Fantastic.